CDOT, Thinking Out Loud in Color, February 7th, 2005. I'm Tim Shadle. Welcome to CDOT. Today I just want to give a quick introduction, let you know where we're headed with this program, and what I intend to have up, who I am. First of all, let me start off with introductions to me. I'm a Java developer since the late 90s. I've been using J2EE since Struts 0.5 came out, and been a web developer pretty much ever since. I've done programming at university IT departments, .com, government work. So that's kind of a broad strokes overview of where I've been. The format of the show, I've been looking for something that gave me a substantive show to listen to while I was on the way to work or somewhere else. So what we're going to try to do here is hold it to 10 to 20 minutes and bring out some topics that really seem to have some interest, at least to me, and hopefully to other Java developers. We've got three shows a week is what I'm targeting right now, so we'll probably have a basic theme for the week, and we might split big topics across the three shows. And probably Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but we'll see how it goes. My desire to put these shows together kind of came out of a recent experience. I've done some internal training at my current place and did a bunch of different classes to help bring some of the developers that were not familiar with J2EE up to speed. These classes, they ran 90 minutes each, three times a week for I think about 6 weeks. So it was 19 classes in all. I taught a lot of those. We had, and then several of the other leads at the place I worked, they taught the others. We basically did a lot of work together on that. So I was really interested in bringing some of these topics out, having a place where they're on the net, in audio. So anybody else that wants to kind of hear our opinions on this kind of work can just get them and listen to them in the car, something interesting. One of the challenges, of course, we're going to have is the fact that with audio, you don't have anything that you can view. You can't look at anything. You're not going to see UML diagrams, so you're not going to see code samples. I'll put those in the show notes on the weblog, but you're not going to be able to see them while we're talking here. So some of the places we might have challenge actually describing what the code might look like or how a particular library might affect your code. So we'll try to describe the basic ideas and from there provide some of that detail on the weblog. With that, I'm going to go ahead and move on to the first topic I wanted to make this week about design. Specifically, the Spring, how Spring and the IOC mentality affect the design of your code. So, give you a bit of background on my Spring experience. It's been been working with it at our current job about 8 months, 9 months. Basically, just as we put our code into production, just as Spring 1.1 went final. So we've been working with it for a little while, and I've been real impressed with it. One of the things I wanted to focus on today is really the basic bean factory that Spring provides, and why it's useful, and how the Spring mentality changes the way you design your own objects. One of the core ideas behind Spring is that it's going to be focused on doing being creation of your objects and what they call wiring up or calling the set methods, establishing the relationships of those objects. A quick analogy I tend to make is it's like having a home theater system that has a lot of different components. You got your DVD player, you've got your VCR, if you still have one. You've got, you know, your TV, your all your different audio components. And on a component-based system like that, what you do is you've got bunches of wires you run behind the consoles to connect them up in whatever order. You buy a new piece of equipment, you just change the wiring a little bit, and now you've got some great thing that makes your video clearer, or whatever kind of component you bought. And you've just inserted it basically into the chain. That's kind of what Spring allows you to do. Instead of having like an all-in-one TV, VCR, DVD combo that is one unit that you'd have to open the back of to change anything, Spring takes the approach that instead of having your objects be coupled together by creating and setting up the relationships themselves, you pull all that work out and you let each object focus on what it wants to do and let it do it well, and let Spring take care of basically the wiring. So that's kind of the overview of the piece of Spring we're going to be talking about today. Okay, so let me back up a bit and talk about the way that the code expresses dependencies. Maybe expresses is a bad word. The kind of dependencies that we have in our code that we want to try to move out, in addition to this creation and relationship code or related to it. So say we've got a class, we've got a computer class, and it has a reference to an object that is going to let it get on the internet. We got dependencies in three big areas. First of all is the variable type we declare. So if we have a computer class and the variable or field that we've got is a Comcast object. So we've got a declaration, Comcast C. So now we have a field that's of type Comcast. That's one dependency. Our computer class is now dependent on the Comcast class being around. The next choice that we have is the constructor choice. So when we have a Comcast class, there's really nothing else we can do but say new Comcast on the other side of the variable declaration. At that point, we've also got that's another place where the dependency is expressed. So variable type, constructor choice. The last place we have a dependency is on the variable methods that we use, the Comcast.connect or the Comcast.sendSpam. Those kinds of things express dependencies on the Comcast class itself because of the way that it's basically, you can only use the methods that Comcast has, and that's a tie you have to Comcast work. Well, what would happen if we wanted to try to get rid of these dependencies? What would that look like? Well, first of all, we'd want to change the type of the concrete class out from Comcast to a generic interface, maybe called ISP. So once we do that, we've eliminated the dependency on the variable type, and consequently, we've also standardized which methods our object can use. So maybe our ISP has a connect method, but it doesn't have a send spam call. So our code needs to change, and it's only going to be relying on the code that the ISP interface defines. So we've switched our dependency. Our dependency now is on an ISP interface and not on the Comcast implementation. You see a lot of that kind of stuff, this discussion, when you look at discussions where people are focused on hash map versus map declarations in your Java code, or you know, list versus array list is another big one where people get discussions about that your variable should be of type list instead of array list. Obviously, there's exceptions to everything. Today, I'm just going broad strokes ideas. But back to the dependencies. So that we've eliminated two out of three, or at least changed the dependency of two out of three to by making our Comcast implementation class variable type use an interface called ISP instead. the next place that we need to look is the constructor. So that constructor is still relying on the Comcast class. So our class is now dependent on ISP and on constructor, and on Comcast, excuse me. So the next thing we need to do is, if we take and replace that constructor, we remove that constructor and instead create a set call. So we have a set ISP, and we no longer have the constructor call in the actual code that we've written. Then what that does is it lets the object creation be done by somebody else. We expect it will be done. We're going to need to have an object, or otherwise we'll get no pointer exceptions, obviously. But we're letting that object creation happen somewhere outside of our current object, our computer object that has the ISP reference. So now we're simply dealing with the work that we need to get done and how to work and collaborate with other objects in the code. That focuses our code a lot more on the business work at hand. But you get a really cool side effect. Once you've done this kind of a work, now your testing is a lot more improved. Instead of actually having to make sure you've got the Comcast class loaded up in your unit test, or to make sure that you've got an implementation class in your unit test that's not going to affect your database or go out and hit a credit card website and actually run a credit card, you've got a chance to put a mock object in there. We'll talk about mocks probably another time, but if you haven't heard about mock objects, go ahead and I suggest you do a Google search. And I know that the pragmaticprogrammers.com has got a sample chapter on there. They've got a book out, Pragmatic Unit Testing with Pragmatic Unit Testing with JUnit. I'd check that out because there's a sample chapter that goes through mock objects real well if you're interested in a detailed look at that. Yeah. So we have a chance now that we have a set method. We can choose the implementation at test time, at runtime, and our class is just going to be able to focus on the work that it wants to accomplish. So this gives us a lot of ability to really go forward and have a flexible setup. Okay, let's jump back to Spring. We've got the Spring we wanted to have be in charge of doing the object creation and managing the relationships and really the set method calls. So now that we've changed our computer class, we've moved the concrete implementation to an interface, we've replaced the constructor with a set method, then really our Spring, we're going to have a configuration file that tells Spring how to construct the objects or which objects to create, and how they ought to be related to one another. And really it's the set method calls. So if we had, say, the computer object, and it relies on the ISP interface again, and we wanted to have a method that used Comcast, then in our Spring configuration we would have one section that defined the computer object, and in there it would basically have the property ISP, which using the regular Java Beans conventions means it's going to make a set ISP call. And we would have a reference to the Comcast object. So Spring would create two objects. It would create the computer object and it would create the Comcast object, and then it would make the set call on the computer object, and it would hand it the Comcast Comcast reference. So at that point, we've actually got an area where the computer object has a reference to that Comcast object, and it has everything it needs to actually operate and complete its work. If we later changed our mind, we wanted to go to AOL, then we could actually swap out the Comcast reference in the Spring configuration with one for AOL. And again, because we're programming to interfaces to that ISP interface, then there shouldn't be any problem swapping those out. Now, the AOL implementation may be flawed, but that's another issue. So it leaves us free to make the choice of the relationships and the implementations. And later on this week, too, we're going to get back to some of the cool things you can do with this setup. Once you've got the creation code and the relationship code out of your objects entirely, you can begin doing some cool stuff if you're programming to interfaces as well. So we'll talk a bit about Spring's dynamically through the declarative transaction management they've got and some of the other things a little later on this week. That's kind of the main introduction to the Spring stuff that I wanted to bring up today. So tune in next time. We're going to go through some more of the Spring features. And at that, I'll say thanks for listening. Keep subscribed, and we'll talk to you later. If you've got something to say, go ahead and send me an email at c.feedback@gmail.com. You can also leave a comment on the weblog. Look forward to hearing from you.